The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
We had no choice, Knicks fans. For so many years, there was no choice. It was the Knicks or nothing, right? There's a choice now. For the first time in your life, you have a choice. Choose wisely. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Meantime, L.A., you think the Clippers show the Lakers they're going to be a problem last night? See, in the business, this is called a tease. I throw it out there. You don't know what I think, do you, right? And then you have to wait for it. The answer is no. The Clippers, no problem for the Lakers. That's right, Raj, my producer in L.A., I ruined the tease. Be a part of Max Kellerman Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed call-in line. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. The college football season is winding down. So is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. But first, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. James Harden responds. The weird thing about a 2 p.m. show on the East Coast is I got all this stuff to talk about from last night, but then news breaks. News about James Harden, right? James Harden, quote, one thing after another. What, he posts this on his IG, right? I went to show love to my homegirl at her event, parentheses, not a strip club, because she's becoming a boss and putting her people in a position of success, and now it's a problem. Every day it's something different. No matter how many times people try to drag my name under, you can't. The real always end on top. Well, let me tell you something. That's great that he went to show his love and everything. She'd be wearing a mask. This ain't that hard, James. Come on. No, but she got tested, and so did I. All right. You know, in certain circumstances, I understand you both got COVID tests. You see each other frequently. You know, people usually do have groups of 6 or 8 or 10 people all together, and if you remain closed in that group, even that's not that safe because each one of those people maybe has their own little extra group that, you know, includes more people, et cetera. But I get it. Realistically, I get people do that. That doesn't sound like what this was. James, that doesn't sound... Why don't you have a mask on, brother? But beyond all that, for my initial impression was... And by the way, if his homegirl is now in a position to put other people in positions of success, good for her and good for James Harden for supporting her. But not like that, man. You still got to be safe nowadays. I'll say this, though. James Harden's stock, like the Rockets have this all wrong. They think we're not getting a good enough deal for him. Hey, James, don't hurt your trade value, right? Because then the Rockets will never trade you. It's not the way it works. The owners have a de facto monopoly in the NBA, right? If you're a great basketball player, you want to get rich in this country playing basketball, you got to play in the NBA. So when they when the collective bargaining agreement happens with the players union, the owners have an enormous advantage, and they win those negotiations. You know what the players have in exchange? Superstars call shots. There's nothing you can do. Well, we're not going to cave and just let a guy hold a franchise hostage. He still has to play to earn his money. Not exactly. He can show up, not have his heart and soul in it. He can put up numbers, still be detrimental to the team's chemistry and all that. Still make it really untenable to keep him on the team. You will trade the superstar tells the team what to do. The teams, let me disabuse teams of notions. True superstars are the boss. They call the shots. Owners got to get that through their heads, including Tillman Fertitta. James is the boss. He will get his money, you will pay him, and he will also submarine your franchise if you don't trade him. Right? So now, since you understand that now, let me explain, hopefully, now let me explain what's going to happen. I explained this about, you know, buying a car. The way you're supposed to is you call a bunch of dealerships in a certain radius within your area and you say, look, I know what make, model, color, all that stuff I want. I know what I want to pay for it. Give me your best offer right now. I'm only going to make one phone call to each place. Whoever gives me their best offer, that's the one I'm going with. Now, the dealership will tell you, well, no, hold on a second. Come down, look at the car. No, I don't need to look at anything. I've seen it. I know what I want. Okay? Well, but come back to me if you get a better deal than this. I'm not coming back to anybody. I'm telling you right now, I'm going with the best deal. What that forces them to do is give you the best deal right away. Because they're competing with everyone. There will be no negotiation. They will come with their best offer immediately. That's what the Rockets have to do right now with Harden. Get your best offer now. Because the longer you wait, the more of a malcontent he is, The more teams get scared off, the lower his trade value. You understand how this works? Now, interestingly, the lower his trade value, the easier he is to trade, right? More teams can actually get in on the bidding. That's good for Harden. No, he only wants to go to this place or that place. He wants off the Rockets right now. That's good for Harden if his trade value goes down. It's bad for the Rockets. They got to move him. They have to move him. And here's the next thing. That was straight talk wireless. No contract, no compromise. KD looked like KD against the Warriors. First of all, I told everybody, the Warriors don't have enough shooting. They have the greatest shooter of all time in Steph Curry. I mean, considering how he has to get his own shot, his handles, the whole thing, from distance from where he shoots, the whole thing, the usage rate. Steph Curry's the greatest shooter of all time. It's not particularly close, by the way. I love Ray Allen. Bunch of guys can shoot the lights out. Klay can shoot the lights out. Steph Curry's the greatest shooter of all time. He's the only above-average shooter at his position. Now check that. There is not even a single average NBA three-point shooter at any other position on the Warriors. Right? For a starting two-guard, forward, power forward, center, whatever positions you want in the newfangled NBA, right, you want to say, none of them shoot as an average player for their position, either as a starter or a backup. No one. Only Steph. Not enough shooting. You know who has enough shooting? The Brooklyn Nets. KD already looks like 80% of himself, at least. That should get better. So barring injury, knock wood, it's going to be a problem. You know what the thing about KD and Kyrie is? Because they're both pure shooters. In addition, especially KD, to being a defender, in addition to being able to get their own shot, to being great passers, to be all three level scorers, in addition to all that stuff, when you're pure shooters from distance as they are, you don't need to surround them with shooters. They're the shooters. You know, LeBron can hit shots from certain spots, but he's not a pure shooter, right? So you got to surround him with shooters. He's got to at least have some. You look at Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, you need to put shooters around him. And shooters are often not really great at, like, sometimes you get 3-and-D guys, you're lucky if you get those around superstars. But 3-and-D guys who can get their own shots, those are stars, right? So those are hard to find. A little easier to find guys who can't shoot and maybe do one other, two other things, right? So when you have two shooters like, let me give you an example. The Nets have Dinwiddie. He ain't a shooter. They have Allen. He ain't a shooter. Right? Can you put guys like that around Ben Simmons? No. But you can put him around, or even LeBron, maybe not the best idea, but you can put him around KD and Kyrie. So now when you look at, and Kenny Anderson pointed this out on the halftime show. I disagree that Jeff Green could start on 50%. Jeff Green could start on 0% of teams. But he's an interesting piece there. And DeAndre Jordan's, you know, he's okay. But 15 minutes a game at center, sure. But when you look at the Nets' non-Kyrie KD players, let's just take them. When you compare them to, say, the Bucks, right? So the Bucks have, like, without Giannis, they have Middleton, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, okay? That's the main support to Giannis. And who, DiVincenzo? Because they didn't get, you know, Brogdon they didn't sign, and Mirotic left for Europe a year ago, and they didn't get Bogdanovic. So this is their team. Now compare that to the supporting cast for KD. Like KD to the Freak, right? There's the comparison. In the East, the two best players, Dinwiddie, LeVert, Joe Harris, and Allen. I mean, if the Bucks supporting cast is better than the Nets, it's only by a very little bit, but I didn't even bring up Kyrie Irving. Do you understand? KD's supporting cast without Kyrie is more or less, probably a little less, the equivalent of the Bucks supporting cast, but plus KD has Kyrie. And for that reason, the Nets cannot make a Harden deal. I wouldn't trade for James Harden, a ball stopper who would completely wreck the depth of the team because you have to trade everything you have to get him. The Nets, as is, will not be stopped in the East. Jordan Schultz joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, ESPN NBA insider/analyst. What do you like? Is that a good title for you, Jordan? Are you the insider analyst? What do you like better?
Max, I don't even know, bro. I think it changes by the day, yeah. But I will definitely take it. And it's after what you just said about the Nets, I'm fired up because I'm with you, mm-hmm. and I saw a lot to be happy about last night if I'm a Brooklyn fan.
What did you like about the Nets? First of all, let me ask you this. My take is this. Yeah. Before we even get into that, they can't trade for James Harden. They are really deep. They have a guy like Caris LeVert who has a smooth offensive game off the bench, apparently doesn't need the ball as much as I thought. They have a lot of guys who really complement these guys. I wouldn't make that move for Harden even if it were available. What do you think about that?
I totally agree with you. I think, first of all, with Brooklyn last night, you saw Kevin Durant 18 months off, no problem. He was comfortable. It's not just the scoring. It was the versatility, and it was also the freedom of movement. I thought he had that 18-foot pull-up and one in the first quarter where you saw him take that hard dribble and explode, and then he changes speed. And then you have the friendship, the prerequisite friendship between him and Kyrie, and that comfort level on the floor, Max. So they have this relationship where even though they haven't played a lot together, and this is game number one, it felt like, okay, they know how to play off one another, how to excel when the other one has the ball, or even when they're on the floor by themselves. So I love that. And then I also thought, to your point about the ancillary pieces, you know, having Joe Harris to spread out, Dinwiddie's a really good player, LeVert's a 20-point scorer. They have so many weapons, and they go 10, 11 deep. And then the final thought is Steve Nash, you know, is his first game as a head coach, but really understanding, okay, this is my point guard. Let me give him the keys. Let me allow him to have successes. And then, maybe more importantly, learn from his failures and then really vibe off one another. So I loved it, and I thought offensively they were really locked in.
A lot of things to consider here. One, you know, I'm thinking about Kyrie and KD as shooters. The fact that you have two superstar players, an MVP player, like a five-star player, and let's call Kyrie a four-and-a-half-star player. Like, he's not just a normal all-star, if not an MVP. He's something more than that, right? Like, Bradley Beal and John Wall, well, Wall's not a shooter. LeBron's not a pure shooter. You know, and AD isn't really either, though they can both shoot it well enough. When I think of combos at this level, even like Steph and Clay, like Steph and KD were, that's why they were impossible. Steph and Clay, it's not that Clay can't put the ball on the floor and make decisions with it. It's that if he's doing that, you got the best version of what you can as a defense. You want him doing that. But KD and Kyrie, who can both put the ball on the floor and get wherever they want and make good decisions and pass the ball, and are also three-level scorers who can bomb from the outside. Like, normally when we see superstar pairings, they both can't shoot like that. So you can play Allen and Dinwiddie and these non-shooters with them and not miss a beat.
That's a great point. And not only that, but you mentioned some of these other lineups. You know, with the exception of the Lakers, I don't think any team in the league is as deep as Brooklyn. And you saw it in the first quarter. When they go for 40 points, they shoot almost 60%. KD and Kyrie average 37 or put up 37. There was a really really high level of comfort, but they also have this, like, ability Brooklyn does to beat you in so many different ways because of that. You know, if Kyrie stays healthy and Kevin stays healthy, imagine what they'll be in game 15 and game 30, 50, let alone the playoffs. So I'm with you. And I think, you know, you mentioned Harden too, Max. Like, you know, Harden, if you're going to trade for Harden, you are doing it because you're going to really believe that this is the year, this is your window to win. But Brooklyn already has that window, and they don't need to mortgage their future by trading a young asset like LeVert or giving away a number one or a number two couple picks. They just don't need it, you know, and I think Brooklyn's in a great position too because there's not the same level of pressure among maybe like a Giannis, you know, with Milwaukee, because Brooklyn hasn't been there and failed before. There is pressure to win, but I think they're really going to grow into this role and only get better.
Yeah, we got to get on to the Lakers because I need to pick your brain about that. But Jordan Schultz, ESPN NBA analyst or insider or whatever the title is today.
I want to
get into the Lakers, but I just got to say, like, Kenny Smith was talking at halftime about the different players on the team, and they kept saying, like, Caris LeVert would start on 70% of the NBA teams. I'm thinking to myself, who wouldn't he start on? Caris LeVert start? Of Caris LeVert's way better than just a starter. Caris LeVert, like, I'm trying to think, is there a team, Blazers or something with a backcourt, but then you just play him at the three. You have to show me a team with a 1-2-3 where all three guys are better than LeVert. Otherwise, this dude is starting, not only starting on any NBA team, you could feature him as the number two option on like maybe half of them. And this dude is at best the third best player on the team. It's a problem. All right, I want to get on to...
Yep, go ahead. Yeah. Can I just jump in really
quick about that?
I remember about a year and a half, 2 years ago, having a conversation with Kevin Durant about Caris without me prompting him, saying, you know, I really like Caris LeVert. And I remember asking him why. He said, because he's really growing into himself. He can do a lot of different things. And for him to say that at that point, he's developed more sense, says a lot to me. And yeah. So I'm excited about LeVert there. And I know that he obviously, he probably would start on every other team in the league. But I love him coming off the bench to give them that type of offense.
For those of you who don't have ESPN Plus, talking to Jordan Schultz, who's not only the ESPN NBA analyst insider, but you just saw it up on the screen, correspondent for the Boardroom and a bunch of other stuff. Okay, I'm looking at the Lakers last night. I don't care that they lost. I think most people don't. You know, it's going to take a minute for them to rev back up. But I'm looking at the Clippers. Ibaka was a good pickup, I think. Nick Batum, if he's interested, like when he got his money and then he got sent somewhere obscure, right? Like, you know, he like out of the way, he seemed uninterested in basketball. If Batum is interested, that's a nice little pickup. And Ibaka's an improvement, but they didn't get a floor general really to organize this offense. And I don't know that they're the biggest challenge to the Lakers because of Paul George's track record in the playoffs. Who do you think is the biggest challenge to the Lakers in the Western Conference?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I like the Clippers. They beat the Lakers because George and Leonard both had monster games. That wouldn't happen, and it hasn't happened in a best-of-seven series. So I'm with you. I look at the team for me that's going to take another step that can really become an issue for the Lakers is Denver. You know, I think because the Nuggets have so many different types of weapons offensively, and they have two great players, and you mentioned shooters. The fact that Jokic can step outside at 7-1 and make a three, and Murray being that type
not to
of
mention
shooter,
bring the ball up, dude.
Bring the ball up. The point. Yeah. Forget point four. He's a point center. Yeah. And then you bring in, and then you think Michael Porter. They drafted R.J. Hampton, who's going to give him some juice off the bench. Obviously, Will Barton's there. They have a really good offense. Defensively, last year, Mike Malone got them to buy in more. And I think as that team gets another year older, I believe Denver is going to be a real threat. And I know that. They haven't gotten there yet, but I think they're right on the doorstep.
Look, maybe Dallas is a Lou Williams away,
Dallas
like
is
off
tough,
the bench.
Yeah.
But I, Jordan, I look at this team. Think of just the like they can play small ball. They can play five out with nothing but tall guys. Like their point guard really is 6'8" in Luka. Tim Hardaway Jr. is an actual good player now, right? Not just he puts up numbers. He can actually be a two-way player who's effective in a number of ways. He's 6'6", 6'7". Dorian Finney-Smith is 6'7", 6'8". Yeah. He can defend, and last year he shot. Maxi Kleber is 6'10" and can shoot and defend.
Right,
Porzingis,
out.
If he's healthy, is a problem. 7'3" and can do all those things. I'm really looking forward to tonight's game, even without Porzingis, against the Suns, who had a tremendous offseason this year.
I think Phoenix is going to take a huge step. Phoenix and Memphis are the two teams in the West that go from, you know, kind of obscurity, Mac, to 6, 7, 8 seed territory. And I think having Chris Paul is going to be massive for them. I like Phoenix a lot. But you mentioned Dallas. You know, offensively, they're tremendous. The biggest question for them is, you know, who's going to alleviate some of that pressure for Porzingis and especially Luka? And I think having Josh Green, the kid out of Arizona they drafted, he will alleviate some pressure defensively. He can make threes. You mentioned Kleber, Finney-Smith. They have a really good roster.
Richardson
they love Kyle
now. Terry, like Jordan
yeah.
Richardson it, now. Like the fact that they lost shooting.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is Richardson's going to play more minutes than Seth Curry did because he's a better player overall, right? Like they got a
better
perimeter defender.
Better defender.
Yeah.
You know, and I think also with Dallas, like I mentioned Denver taking a step further maturity-wise, I think Dallas has an opportunity because Luka is so wise beyond his years. And having – I talked a little bit with Mark Cuban this morning. They feel – Dallas feels really, really good about that team. And I don't know if they're there yet, but they're going to take another step forward. And because they haven't had the playoff issues, again, of like a Milwaukee, that team seems to be pressure-free to me. So I love Dallas. I think they're a contender in terms of the top four in the West. And if I'm in the playoffs, because of the way they score, it's a very scary app.
Jordan, they're telling me to wrap, but I want to get your answer on this. Based on what you saw from the Nets yesterday, let's say that's really who they are, and they stay healthy, and we get a Nets-Lakers matchup in the finals, KD, LeBron, on fairly evenly matched teams, do you think the Nets could beat the Lakers in the finals if this is them?
I do, Max, I do. And I know it's a little prisoner of the moment, but I really believe it because of their depth. You know, they can match the Lakers' depth. Now, I think bringing in Schroeder and Harrell will really help them on both sides of the ball, especially Dennis' quickness. But because, you know, we haven't even mentioned guys like Landry Shamet, who's a great three-point shooter. The fact that, you know, you talked about Jared Allen defensively, you know, he can block shots. He can body people. He'll at least be a presence for Anthony Davis in that scenario. So, to me, yes, Brooklyn, because of offensively with Kyrie and Kevin, and then defensively being able to be so versatile, I think they're a real threat.
Jordan Schultz, ladies and gentlemen, on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. By the way, you can check him out on ESPN. He's the NBA insider. Check him out on ESPN Plus, contributor on the Daily Wager, and a correspondent on the Boardroom. Thanks a million, Jordan. We'll talk again soon. Coming up, some serious movement in my power rankings. See who did not make the cut. NFL.
Max, the podcast.
All right, Max, we're all waiting for the shakeup.
A shakeup indeed. So
let's get it started. First team up.
Five!
Now, last week, you had the Rams at number five, and you warned L.A. You said, hey, don't sleep on the Jets, man. Don't get caught sleepwalking. And that's exactly what they did. So who's number five now?
The Rams got caught sleeping, slipping, tripping. Flipping, is that one? Could I do flipping? I mean, whoa, sure. You can't lose to the Jets and be any kind of power rankings. Get out of here, Rams.
Sorry, L.A.
Number five, and this was not easy. I considered the Cleveland Browns. Sorry, you can't beat the Ravens or the Steelers in your own division. I'm not putting you there. You're 0-3 against your rivals, the real division, or I can't put you there. I considered the Colts. I don't believe in Phillip Rivers. I hate to say it. I just don't believe in Phillip Rivers. The Tennessee Titans. The Titans, Browns, and Colts, not much separates them. They all beat each other, kind of, right? They're about a similar level, maybe a step below the real Super Bowl contenders. But I believe in the Titans quarterback. And for that reason, I have them just by a hair over the Browns and the Colts at five.
All right, sounds good. Next team up.
Four!
Yes, thank you, Count. You had the Bills at number four, and of course they thrashed Denver in Denver and Mile High City on Saturday. So who's number four this week, Max?
Not the Bills anymore. Moving on up.
All right, so someone
New
moved
Orleans
on down.
Saints. The New Orleans Saints. I have not dropped them from the power rankings. I know they lost two in a row. And one is a game they're supposed to win. Like, I get it. But the Eagles were a team that you could legitimately sleep on. The Eagles didn't catch them slipping. Not at all. There was no reason to think Jalen Hurts could play like that in his first start. Dude. He was sensational. There's no way you would think you're going to lose to the Eagles with a rookie quarterback starting. But what you didn't consider, Raj, see, you didn't consider. I have to consider these things.
Yeah.
You didn't consider. What's the matter with you? But I, in retrospect, now have considered. What you didn't consider is that Doug Peterson's actually an excellent coach. Carson Wentz was making him look like a bum. No, as soon as you put any other quarterback there, Peterson can make it work, and Hurts has talent. So I'm not going to hold that much against them. And then you got to come back the next week. And by the way, it was with your backup quarterback. Then you come back the next week, and Drew Brees is coming back from a million fractured ribs and a punctured lung. He was in traction with the leg up, like in the hospital and the cartoons and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
With the cast on and the leg up and mummified and stuff, just the eyes poking out, sipping through a straw. Like, that Drew Brees comes back against the best team in the league. By the way, without his number one receiver, is down immediately, getting his teeth kicked in. And in the end, it's a one-score game. They lose by a field goal. I'm dropping the Saints from my top five just because of that. I'll drop them from three to four. Who's next?
All right. Fair enough. All right, Count. What number are we on?
Three!
Number three, you had those aforementioned Saints. They were number three. So that means we have a new number three this week, Max. Where are we going?
Wait a minute. Did you just say aforementioned?
No.
Raj Groves doesn't know what aforementioned means. What do you got? One of these? Do you have one of these, like, word of the day calendars going for someone? For Christmas or something?
I've been hanging out with Don King.
Aforementioned. I go back with Raj quite a ways now, quite a bit by now, and I know I smell something fishy.
I know words, I just don't know how to spell them very well.
But that's true. That's true. His vocabulary is not bad. It's the spelling that's hilarious.
Yes.
Number three is the Bills. They got to move up. I mean, the Bills are dominant. They are, I think, like, not just because we're doing power rankings right now. If you had to say so far this season, name the three best teams, I think you'd be hard-pressed not to include the Bills on any list like that. Josh Allen is not quite MVP level this year because he's had some ups and downs. But, no, I take that back. He is MVP level. He's not the MVP. But he's MVP level. And as I said for a while now, he's a top five quarterback in the NFL. Josh Allen's top five in the NFL. I got the Bills third.
Okay. All right. Count where are we at now. So the question is, after the Chiefs struggled with that win, do we have a new number two? Who's number two, Max?
Well, I just said Josh Allen's top five in the world quarterback. Are the next two teams we're talking about, because there are only two left, the Packers and the Chiefs. And when you talk about best, not greatest, not most accomplished, that's Tom Brady or Joe Montana or someone like that. I mean, best we've ever seen. It ain't Dan Marino anymore like when we were kids, Raj. It ain't. Oh, Montana has the championship. Marino has the talent right now. It's not Peyton Manning, who couldn't get it done in the playoffs, right?
Okay.
The two best we've ever seen, we all know it, everyone knows this, is Mahomes and Rodgers. Those are the two. And Rodgers is playing as well as he's ever played. And Mahomes is coming off in a Super Bowl MVP after winning an MVP the previous year. The two best ever at the height of their powers. But which team is number one? At number two in my power rankings,
I'm waiting.
The Green Bay Packers. They have not overtaken the Chiefs. I'm very sorry to tell you, the Packers have been very good. But, and by the way, a lot of, I would take Mahomes over Rodgers by a hair, right? Even if Rodgers maybe deserves the MVP at this moment, if I had to choose between the two, just who I'd want, maybe Mahomes over Rodgers by a hair. It's close. But Patrick Mahomes is throwing to Tyreek Hill. And by the way, Stephen A. said it on the air today. Who's the best receiver in football? He'd been saying Tyreek Hill. He's right. Like, I would never came out and contradicted it, but I was like, he's there. He's right there with some other guys. Who would you take over Tyreek Hill? The fastest land mammal. You'd have to take him. And then Travis Kelce, like, Mahomes just has an edge in certainly experience at the head coach position. But also in terms of his offensive weapons, the offensive firepower favors the Chiefs. And for that reason, the Chiefs are number one over the Packers. So there's my power rankings. One Chiefs, two Packers, three Bills, four Saints, and five making their debut for the, well, at least for the first time in weeks and weeks, is the Tennessee Titans. There it is, Raj.
All right. Good job, Max. I like it.
Yes,
and thank you, Count.
Very good job, Max. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting, home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Yeah, the Count was one of my favorite Sesame Street characters. Maybe we could do, like, I sometimes would do, like, a lineup. You could do a lineup using lunch meat. You know, like, ham leads off, roast beef hits cleanup. You know, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying. You got what I'm saying. Maybe turkey leads off. Or maybe, no, turkey hits second, let's be honest. Who's the number three hitter? Anyway, the point is, you get the idea, Raj. You get the idea. We could do that with Sesame Street characters, too. Like some kind of a ranking or position with Sesame Street characters, because you got some good ones. Count is up there, but the Cookie Monster was tremendous. Cookie Monster might have been the best dude. And, you know, my kids got into Sesame Street, so I knew at least, they don't watch it anymore, but all the new characters. And, you know how old timers always like...
With the Grouch?
Oh, Oscar the Grouch. Listen, let's be honest. The Sesame Street characters, or we could bracket them like a tournament. The Sesame Street characters come down to, you know, the final four certainly includes the Cookie Monster and Oscar the Grouch. And, in fact, that's probably the championship game. Cookie Monster versus Oscar the Grouch. Who didn't want to live in that garbage can? Where did he go? What was in there? Did it go all the way underground?
Right.
The NBA really tips off tonight. A key game that features two teams, both of whom could challenge the Lakers. I can't wait. By the way, and it's the late game, ESPN, 10:30 p.m. I got to stay up until 1 in the morning tonight. 30 for 30 Podcasts presents March 11th, 2020, a standalone audio documentary that tells the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans, as told by those who lived the events of that day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and many others. March 11th, 2020, will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. People forget how fast that happened. Do you remember how fast that happened? How many events, they change your entire world, your day-to-day existence, just like that and for everyone. 30 for 30 Podcasts presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Max, the podcast.
By the way, I thought, for some reason, I thought we weren't going to be on tomorrow because I got my wires crossed. I thought Raj was taking off New Year's Eve day or something like that. And you would think like I'd be happy about getting the day off or like, you know, oh, I have to work tomorrow. But in fact, the way I am, when I don't do the radio, in particular the radio, because TV is a little more structured and it's, and I'm on a debate show on First Take. Like, we have to, it's not just, hey, here's my opinion. We're debating stuff. So sometimes you have some opinions you want to get out and because we agree, we just don't do it, right? The people in my life are much happier when I do my radio show because otherwise I do this to them. You see what I'm saying? They get all my takes. They didn't ask for takes. They're like, what are you? And by the way, it's all girls, right? I'm surrounded by.
You walking around talking about your power rankings?
Yeah. Like, I don't care. Everyone, I know. I don't care. But when I can do the radio show, I've gotten it out off my chest. You know, I've gotten it out of my system. Big night in the NBA tonight, for real. And by the way, what kills me is I don't live on the West Coast anymore. And so once upon a time, you know, Mavs against the Suns, I have to see that game. 7:30 start time, I'm laughing. 7:30, no problem. Game's over, and I got a little night, and I'm asleep. The game could be over, and I could hang out after the game. And I'm asleep before midnight, like way before. 10:30 start. Oh, even like, you know, one of two things happens. Either like by the third quarter, I'm trying not to pass out, or else I'm wired and now it's time to go to sleep. And I'm like, you know, it's exhilarating, some of these games, and you're wired like, oh, damn, it's 1 a.m. I got to get up early and I can't go to sleep. It's like I'm caffeinated. But especially a game like Mavs Suns. Look, the Mavs, that's ESPN's late game tonight. The Mavs are not going to have Porzingis. But they got a whole lot of anyway. Like, they have real, when people talk about small ball, what they really mean is players with the skills of smaller players. These dudes, the Mavs, can run small ball with like 7'3 dudes, 6'10 dudes, 6'8 dudes, 6'7 dudes, you know. Richard in Manhattan, real quick. Let's take one on the Nets. Go ahead, Richard.
Max, to your point on James Harden. Last night, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert combined for 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. A little more than starters' minutes. 45 minutes between the two.
Right.
They combined for 29 points, 14 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. You're not going to get that production from Harden, James Harden. Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan combined for 37 minutes.
All right, look, we got 30 seconds. Richard, I'm sorry. We got 30 seconds. It's a good point, but I would say this. You ain't getting that production from Harden without 1,000 extra dribbles. You know, Caris LeVert knows you can't take 11,000 dribbles, and he should never be taking more than 4 or 5 anyway. But he can score off the dribble real well. He's not just a spot-up dude. No, I like this team the way it is with the Nets. I wouldn't touch it. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.